Hello listeners and welcome to the Improv Company's podcast, Geniuses, Poets and Artists, with me, your host Kim, where I chat with improvisers from Singapore and elsewhere about themselves, about improv and about things they love. This episode features Jester, or Lefteris, a long-standing member of the company Players and host of Lefteris Ask Science, a science communication podcast. We make some awesome analogies, curse at the weather, and go down the rabbit hole of power and knowledge. Stay a while and listen. Good afternoon, Jester.
Hi, Kim. Nice to see you.
Yes, welcome to Geniuses, Poets and Artists. This is our inaugural episode and you are our very first guest.
I'm very excited. I'm very honored to be the first guest. I'm very happy. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you for agreeing to be here. First of all, could you introduce yourself to our audience?
So, my name is Jester. The actual name is Eleftherios Christos Stafaras. That's too long. Lefteris is the shorter version, but I've used Jester as an online gaming name for a very long time, so I tend to use that sometimes. I am an improviser for about 6 years now with the Improv Company. I did my first one-on-one class back in March 2015. It was in March 2015, and there were no thunders at that day. It was not raining, as it is raining right now, because it's the first podcast, and everything will be noisy, because that's how we learn. So yeah, I've done improv since 2015. Rajat was my first one-on-one teacher, and then Kim for the rest of my 101, 201. I did not do 301, because 301 was not a thing back then. And then God is punishing you for not having 301 classes back in 2015.
I deserve that, yes.
I came to Singapore in 2015 to do my PhD, and I found improv instead. I'm more interested in improv than I was interested in my PhD. I did my PhD in NUS, and now I'm working as an acoustics engineer in a startup company here. We're making hearing aids.
Wonderful. That is a great introduction. And yes, I've known you for many years now. I think it's 5, maybe 6. I've lost count. That's how long it has been. And yes, you are now one of the members of the company Players, one of the improv company's house teams.
Yes, and I'm very happy. I joined in 2017 or 2018. What is time anyway? I don't remember exactly. But I remember that the first ever show we did was a permutation of a PowerPoint karaoke.
Mm, yes.
I don't know if we can use that name.
Oh, you know, PowerPoint karaoke exists in like 17 different forms because yeah. People like PowerPoint,
yeah,
I guess, and people like karaoke, yeah. And they like making things up.
So it was actually, we were actually an intermission show for ASAP, I think.
That sounds correct.
And my first show was PowerPoint karaoke with, I was paired up with Yvonne. Mm. Which was great. Yvonne is a great improviser.
Yvonne is great, yes. We miss her and wish she would do more things.
Yes. She's back tentatively. She did a show with us last week at the National Gallery. We did the collage in front of a packed crowd of 10 people in the National Gallery.
Well, 10 people in the art gallery is a win, I'd say.
Yes, exactly. It's better to... We've had improv shows with less people than 10.
Yes, we have definitely done that. So, you know, 10 is good considering it's a pandemic, and it was also a show that was arranged quite quickly.
Yes.
And you're also doing a D&D, Dungeons & Dragons improv show.
So, yeah, the latest artistic, I'm doing air quotes, it's an audio show, I don't know why I do this. The latest artistic adventure that we're doing with the company, with the half of the company Players, is a D&D show where I came up with, it's fine.
Thunder
everywhere. It's raining heavily. It is Monday, the 19th of March.
Yes, and of course, the time we decided to record this was exactly the time that thunder decided to happen.
Of course.
Like the rest of the day so far has been actually quite nice.
Yeah. And I wanted to bike to come over, and then it started raining, so I didn't bike, and then we wanted to record, and it's raining and thunder. Anyway, so D&D, which is what we're discussing about, is a show that I came up with A couple of years ago, we did it for Cage Match. We did a solo show here at the Den. And now we're doing it at the National Gallery, which is great because we have a bigger stage. We have more technology to play with. And we don't have the interaction with the audience, which is nice, but COVID sucks. So we don't want to have that. So, yeah, we do shows fairly, not fairly frequently now at the National Galleries.
Oh, yes. Very frequently. Please come and watch.
I don't know where our next show at the National Gallery is going to be. Probably at some point in April or May. But yeah, the idea is that there is a Dungeon Master and we have digital maps and digital dice. And we have like the group of adventurers going on adventures. And they play on the map that the audience creates when they come in. So it's the world that we all create together.
Yes, which really is actually life.
Yes.
This is the world we all create together and hopefully it's a nice one.
Yeah, but that's when I was coming up, trying to come up for a way for the audience to interact and with the company players doing the D&D show during the pandemic. Before, I had like a plush D20 and I was, instead of actually rolling it, I was throwing it to the audience and the audience was deciding what the dice was going to say. But now I wanted to create that because D&D for me, I've been playing since I was 8. I'm 31 now, so it's a long time since I've played D&D. It's a collaborative storytelling. So there is the Dungeon Master who has the idea for the story, but we all together create the world around it. So I wanted for the audience to have some of that aspect with it. So I figured that I created the outline of a map and they wrote the names of the places so that at least gives them some input in the world that we're creating on stage.
Right. Even though because of the pandemic, we can't let them directly contribute during the show.
Exactly.
But at least this way, they do have some input. Yeah, and that's a lot of what improv is about.
Yeah.
It's so live and it's so spontaneous. And a lot of the time, it doesn't really translate as well to video.
Yeah.
Because it lacks that liveness of it in a theatrical setting. And now with COVID, they are physically there in the same room, but there's always a 3-meter gap, number one. And number two, they cannot expel droplets at us.
So even if they're very careful in the way, the way they scream at us on stage, they cannot do that because...
Yes. when we were first allowed to come back, I was for a little while concerned whether they would be allowed to laugh. Thankfully, they are, which is nice.
Yes.
I thank you, world, for allowing us to laugh.
That's small wins in life. That's what we like.
Yes. While we wait for life to resume its normal pace, a little bit of laughter goes a long way.
Definitely. Yeah. And that's basically what we missed with like when we had the circuit breaker here. We tried to do a couple of like Zoom prov. We used what was that platform called?
Vidprov.
Mm-hmm. We made the effort. It didn't really work because again we're lacking that immediate feedback from the audience. Mm-hmm. No actual participation. There was a bit of a delay from the stream, so every time we were asking for suggestions, we had to wait like 15 seconds.
Yes, yeah, 15 seconds in real life feels okay, but when you're in the middle of a show and you say, "Can I have a suggestion?" and you wait and wait. And then it comes in, at which point you...
And then the audience have to wait.
Yes. So really, it's just, like the pandemic, an exercise in patience.
Yeah.
And waiting. And wondering when are things going to change. Yeah.
The weather.
Like the weather. Which is now doing its thing.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Improvise, adapt, overcome.
Yeah, it's just every time we say something and then I feel like I've said something like slightly controversial and the weather chips in a little bit. When I was a kid, my mom would tell me, the sky gods, this is transliterated from Chinese, so,
okay,
are angry. And then are angry with you or perhaps angry with our neighbors or someone else.
Okay.
And I had a fun childhood.
That's nice. There's always a reason for the gods to be angry. So,
it is. Great. So, out of curiosity, I mean, that's really fun to hear, like, how from your point of view, what you've been doing and so on, the D&D prof and our relationship to the weather. How would you describe your relationship to improv?
It, like a teenager discovering sex for the first time.
That's a lovely analogy. I'm getting all these images, mostly in my head, just to be clear,
yes,
on the podcast. This is not on the screen.
Yes.
Imagination. But yes.
It's basically, especially because I didn't have a background. I have a background in engineering. I did metallurgy when I was in university, and then I did physics, and then I did acoustics. I had no real connection with theater. So improv was my first connection with theater. So it was always like, if I try this, the person that he's on stage with me, will he or she or they like it? Will the audience like it? It's like, it's basically like a trial and error of like, I like this. Oh, I don't like this. And then sometimes you don't something a lot. You're like, I don't want to do this ever again. And then a week later, it's like, maybe I want to do this again. So in the beginning, with the first year or so when I was doing my 1-on-1, 2-on-1 classes, I was like, oh, let's do improv on everything. Let's do improv this, improv that, improv like, everybody should do improv. That was my, and then I became part of the team. We tried different shows. We tried different, like, explore different avenues to see what is acceptable. Not acceptable in a social way, but acceptable in a mechanistic way, and what we can actually do on stage that can kind of work in improv. So yeah, there's a lot of excitation in improv, and then you begin with excitation all the time, but then you end either with a nice satisfaction and euphoric feeling, or a feeling that was like, oh no, I want to crawl under my bed and not see anybody for a couple of months.
Okay. Is that how sex is?
That was my sexual experience in the beginning.
Because that is where this analogy started, and I was like,
yeah, so it's either you begin extremely excited.
Right.
I'm very excited to do this. And then you either, this was the best thing ever. And then after a while, also sometimes you think, this was the best thing ever. And then you get feedback from the community, and it's like, you had more fun than I had.
yes.
So yeah, that's where the sexual excitation and that's not where I want to go with this, not sexual excitation, but the excitation that you experience in when you're experiencing it for the first time, your sexuality, and the excitation you're experiencing the first time improv, it's very similar to me.
Well, that, I mean, it's titillation aside, it's actually a great analogy, because it's much more fun to do it with people than alone. It's also a lot of experimentation. People get really enthusiastic about it, and then they really start doing some weird stuff with it. Some of it works, some of it doesn't.
Yeah,
some
and
of
there's like people. There's like specific like factions of people that want to do very specific type of improv.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something that's not for me, but good for you. You can exist.
Yeah,
you can wear your leather and like spank people. It's fine.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, you have your thing. I have my thing.
Exactly.
You know, we all enjoy it in different ways. And
exactly.
It's all great. And, improv positivity.
Yeah. And actually, it's very funny that you mentioned that it's always fun to do it with more people, because I started doing improv as an avenue to do stand-up here in Singapore. Because I was doing stand-up in Greece for like a couple of months before I came here. And I wanted to continue to do stand-up here. And I was like, but I have no idea how the local scene is. I don't know how the local humor is, and also I've never performed in English, so it's going to be maybe easier if I start doing improv and like see how that is. And like, but then I liked improv so much I abandoned the idea of doing stand-up and continued doing improv. I did stand-up for a while, but then who has the time to do all the things and work?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the world has plenty of space for people who want to do it on their own.
Yeah, exactly. It's also fine. If you want to do improv on your own, it's fine. Don't let anybody else tell you that you're not supposed to.
Improv is a welcoming I was going to say church, but then started going to all kinds of places, so let's not go there. But it is very welcoming, and there's a room for everybody. So.
Definitely.
Well, thank you for sharing that and exploring that particular analogy. That'll be fun, and we might come back to that at some point.
Sure.
So aside from improv, what else are you the most interested in?
Well, I also host my own podcast, shameless plug here.
But plug away.
So I did, before I even started my PhD, I had a radio show in Greece. I was doing, I didn't watch a lot of theater when I was young, but I listened to a lot of music. So I had a radio show for 7 years before I came here. And I was a radio host, I was putting music, I was writing things about music, but always at the same time, I had a small snippet in my radio show where I was like, oh, scientific news of the day, where I had like 15 minutes, and I was like, oh, this thing happened, and this was interesting for me because X, Y, Z. And that was something that I enjoyed. I never had the chance to actually talk because I was in a music radio, I did not interview scientists, I was interviewing musicians. So, but it was just like my 10, 15 minutes of like, hey, you learned something today other than like music. You learned that what like a solar cell is or like what a battery is and shit like that. So when I did my PhD, when I started, I always had that in the back of my head. I was like, this PhD will at least give me some credibility. I was like, hey, I can at least understand how research is happening in universities. So if I ever go and talk to somebody about his research, I understand what he's going through. So I started a podcast a year ago or so called Lefteris Ask Science, where I meet people from like different disciplines. It's easier for me when I interview engineers, but it's more at the same time, it's more interesting for me when I don't interview engineers because I learn more things. So yeah, I have this podcast where I interview people and I tried to create like little stories, like in a documentary style format thing. So I create little stories about what it is that they're doing, how they're doing it, why they're doing it. And then because I know the attention span of people is like quite small, especially when we're talking about something quite technical as a scientific discovery, I try to limit it to like 20 minutes, 25 minutes. So if I have the time in that 20, 25 minutes, I also put like things about the personal lives of the researchers and like what it is hard for them to do the research, their hardships and like things like that.
Okay. Well, I'm a fan. I've been listening to it and we will include the link to the Lefteris Ask Science in the description. What for you is the best part of running this podcast?
It's actually unlocking people in the sense that because a lot of times you would interview somebody who doesn't have the social abilities to actually discuss his work, his or her work, right? So it's they're quite closed in the beginning, and then I enjoy through the discussion about their work to actually see them when I ask something about I see them that they're interested in, and I see their face like lit up, and then actually be more open and discuss with me about their work. That's what is super interesting for me.
Right. So it sounds like this is part of the science communication kind of field where you try to get, I mean, these scientists are experts in whatever it is that they've got their training in, but to try and communicate that to an audience, possibly a lay audience, or, you know, then being able to get them to open up and to create that pathway so that they can do that is part of why you're doing this.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think if you can reach the core of like why is somebody doing the research that they want to do, because doing academic research is something that it's not a career move, really. Nobody goes into academia and is like, I will earn all the money in the world and I will be the most famous person. If you dedicate your life and at least 4 years of your life to do a PhD to one specific small thing, there is something that you see an interest in it. And I believe that if I can manage to see that thing from your eyes, from your perspective, I can understand why it is so interesting. And then hopefully through the podcast, I'll managed to communicate why that thing is so interesting to more people.
Okay, that sounds like a great thing. Just generally, more knowledge is in the world would be better, especially, you know, these days, sometimes people can feel like they are experts just because they've seen something on Facebook or they believe a demagogue, but really spreading knowledge, actual knowledge.
Yeah, and that's one of the things through the podcast is like, I don't care if you understand what it is that they're doing, because it could be super technical about like a chemical reaction that he or she are studying for a very long time. But the people that don't do science, that have no idea about how the academic thought works, to at least understand that it is a process that takes years and years and years in order to have a very small conclusion sometimes. It is important for them to understand it so that they don't go on YouTube. It's like, that person on YouTube said that vaccine is dangerous and can cause autism because two people had it and they had autism. Like, that's not how it works. Let me explain to you why. I don't expect you to understand the biology and the chemistry about why it is not dangerous, but at least I expect you to understand why the data are like, oh, two people I had in my family had this vaccine and they got autism. That's not how things work, science, how we get data.
Mm. Okay. So knowledge about the process and hopefully getting a bit more trust in that process rather than resorting to other things.
Yeah.
Great. Scintillating, fascinating stuff. Looking forward to the next episode. I wanted to ask if your training with regards to improv has influenced or helped or hindered that in any way, like what you've been doing with Lefteris Ask Science.
Yeah, I mean, in the exercises that we're doing to be able to be in, don't make any sound. the exercises that we're doing to be in, to collaborate with fellow improvisers on stage and actually create more empathy, basically, between us on stage, to create a scene, to create a story. That helps a lot when you're doing interviews, I think, because, again, I do not have the story when I start interviewing somebody. Like, I am just a person. I see it as a person who's like, I have a blank slate. I don't understand what it is that you're doing. Explain to me what it is that you're doing. But at the same time, I need to empathize with them so that I can understand what excites them, what it is that it's difficult for them. Try to see the thing, their research from their perspective. So improv has helped me a lot because most of the times you don't know what it is that your fellow improviser is going to do on stage, but empathy is helping you to see the scene from their side. So like, especially if you play with somebody for a very long time, if I see Bhavani being on stage and she's slightly humped up, oh, she's going to play the old witch lady. So I know. if I see Daniel also being humped, he's doing his old person that is also slightly not racist. What's the word?
Cranky. Little,
cranky. Yeah. Slightly intolerant towards other people.
We should probably try to work on broadening the physical expression of age among our improvisers, because most of us are sub 40.
Yes.
For now. And we can probably play old people in other ways, other than hunching. I'm old.
But yeah, if I see you going on stage with your chest all pumped up and like ready to rally the troops, like, I know that we're going to kill somebody because that's what's going to happen.
I mean, generally, I just feel like violence.
And I'm pretty sure that I have those tendencies as well. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe you will know. But improv has helped me to actually, when I see the physicality of the other person, when I see where they have their gaze, how it is that they're saying some things, that helps me understand what it is the core of the interest for them for the work.
And that's interesting, because for me, that what you're saying is where you are thinking about the improviser and you are familiar with them, so you can read them a little bit better. That's where that empathy comes from.
Yeah.
One other version of that I've heard quite recently, and I can't remember where, but is that as improvisers, when we train people to do scenes and they learn how to do it and play another character, for a lot of people, it is the most attempts they've made at trying to imagine being someone else. And that stretches that bounds of empathy from always being in your own body and your own person, which is very understandably the default option, to thinking, oh, what would this other person do? What would they feel like? What would they be motivated by? What are they thinking about? And that creates a little bit more empathy for other people. You are now a little more capable of thinking outside your own self.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also one of the reasons, like when we're doing improv, I find that that's easier to do when it's a smaller group, because I can get into the shoes of like 3-4 people if we're like a 5 or 6 person team. If we're like 15-16 people in the team, it's hard to actually be in tune with everybody, right?
Right.
So it's easier to do this.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. And I think there definitely is an optimal number of people in groups. It goes a little bit into organizational psychology, which I know only very little parts of that are maybe a little relevant to us. Like groups of 7 or less are easier to manage, that kind of thing. But definitely there's an effect on that. Great. We're almost done. But before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you, Lefteris/Jester.
Yeah.
So where are you headed next?
So that's I'm having my 30 year crisis in life. So when I started doing improv, I always enjoyed making people laugh. So I thought, I was like, yeah, I like it. Making people laugh, it like takes their mind off of whatever troubles it is they have. And it's nice. After doing this for 5-6 years, I don't know if it's me, but things tend to get a bit samey in the comedy aspect of it. So recently we took together a workshop.
Yes.
With Lindsay
McGowan.
Yes.
Yes, Lindsay McGowan from the US, Austin.
Yeah.
Lately, I think she's moving.
So we did a workshop on dramaturgy and about how, basically, I learned a lot about how to actually build a show from the ground up, like from zero to, from having just a concept and an idea in your head to what are the steps that you preferably need to do in order to achieve and have that show. And at the same time, one of the interviews that I did with the Lefteris Ask Science podcast was with a guy called Kyle Messick. He's a psychologist that studies heavy metal music and heavy metal culture. Mm-hmm. He was talking to me about how a lot of people that have this/ abilities, they lean towards listening to heavy metal music, and they feel more welcomed in the heavy metal community and music. And when he tried to find out why that was because there is a lot of bands in heavy metal that actually talk about schizophrenia, these types of and mental disabilities, and they're not talking about them correctly. They're not representing them correctly, but at least they're talking about it. There is there is something that's already happening there. While at the same time, in pop music or in everyday society, we tend to like sweep things under the rug. Mm-hmm. So they like to, they tend to go towards that community because there's already a discourse there. So I've always wanted to see, at the same time, what are the limits that we can do with improv in a more dramatic sense. So I do want to make a show that is not a comedy show, that is a drama show, talking about important things. But I understand how difficult it is, because it's not going to be only me on stage. It's going to be more people on stage, and everybody needs to be comfortable to talking about mental health and suicidal thoughts and whatever mental problems that they had, people would experience, and tried to do an improv show based on the struggles that everyday people have. So that maybe the people who are watching the show are able to at least feel more comfortable with their own thoughts, and we feel more comfortable that I'm not the only person who has had these problems, and to actually have to not feel ashamed about feeling sad, having depression or things like that.
Right. So also seeing some version of yourself being represented on stage, and not just the usual improv comedy.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay. So because I do think that I'm a lucky person in life. I've had my mental problems as everybody, but I'm healthy. I'm 31 years old. I have a nice job. I do improv in my spare time. I am in a relatively lucky part of the society. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I want to look at the people who are behind me, quote unquote, and they're not that lucky, and actually try to help these people as much as I can, even having that empathy and trying to see the things through their eyes. But it's something that needs attention, obviously, because it's not something you need to take lightly. But I'm very... I like to challenge myself and see what it is that I can do.
Okay. I think that's really interesting as well, because improv, it is an art form. And if it's, you know, there is a space for entertainment, there's a space for laughter, there's just about the laughter. But if, as artists, we want to go out there and say something more about our world, like, you know, coming together and really changing that world, we have input in that, then I think if we are in a place and of privilege and enough power to be able to do that, then we should.
Agreed. And it's also something that I think the local scene lacks. I know that Asher and Annie did a show with Thick Soul and Tight in Manila a couple of years ago. I was very sad because we had a show like right after them, so I was not able to go see them. But I heard that they got a standing ovation, and understandably, because they're both great people and great improvisers. But yeah, and again, they did a very nice show, Thick Solid Site and Ultra. They did a nice show a couple of months ago at the National Gallery.
Which is raising other questions.
Yes.
Yes, about society. What kind of society do we want to live in?
And it was still a fun show. It was not a drama show. It was a fun show. But it was raising serious questions.
Right? Yes. And that's, I think, ultimately, that's at least one of the goals of art.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, expressing yourself or trying to make someone else laugh or entertaining them, but also raising questions like, where are we now? Where do we want to go?
Yeah, definitely. But I'd like to see the local scene to do that a bit more, mm-hmm. and like, yeah, be the change you want to see in the world, right? So if I manage to do one thing that for the same way that I got inspired by Asher and Annie and John, and wanting to do something more serious, maybe somebody else will see. It sounds a bit like I'm patting myself in the back here, but I don't mean it like that. If somebody sees something that we do on stage and gets inspired, and does something else, because that's how art progresses, also, right?
Yes. Okay, I really love what you're saying. I'm really looking forward to what else you've been putting out there, both on your podcast as well as on the improv stage and possibly elsewhere.
Yes, thank you. Also, the podcast will continue to grow. Lefterius Asks is... I enjoy doing it. It takes a big chunk of my free time, but I really, really like it. Meeting people from all over the world and finding out what makes them tick, what makes their science grow.
Okay, well, this has been really fun. Thank you so much, Jester.
Thank you, Kim. Good luck for the podcast. I'm very excited to hear the next episodes. I'm very excited to see who is going to interview you about this. About you want to interview improvisers from Singapore and Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
I also want to hear your thoughts about improv and art and how it began. But that's a tale for another day, I guess.
All right. Well, thank you, listeners, for staying with us up to this point. We are done. And look out next week for next week's episode of Geniuses, Poets and Artists.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for staying with us. This has been Kim from The Improv Company. We'll be back next week. Until then, stay creative and speak truth to power.